SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online, a good option. And at our website too, stevebick.com. And the day after the run to Monmouth, and it got so many people that it just. And either enjoyed or just are pleased at what looks to be a watershed circumstance for the very pleasant oval and facility there in Oceanport. And just a quick buzz down and be back for Haskell Week. The foundation being laid for another run at a Triple Crown winner, maybe. John Himes, a little evasive, but of course they're courting the Triple Crown winner, and whatever other major players come down to the shore, it's going to be a great summer. This really. Yes, they've been underway, but really get the sense that this puts the Spurs. I put a couple of goofy wagers in before I left. I bet Portugal, as I suggested. I got Portugal at 15-1 to win the World Cup. And don't ask me. I bet the Sabres for next if the Golden Knights. If they could make it to the finals, and actually, no sooner did I put just $10 at 75-1. No sooner did I put that down, but the Sabres made a couple of moves. So I don't know. Maybe they're quickly trying to gird themselves for next year. But there's a bunch of funny videos of people betting and playing to the crowd, and it was. There were a couple of very funny comments. It was really a great experience, and I'm glad I did it, and I appreciate some of the feedback that people celebrated along with. There was one very unhappy piece of news that was discovered after the broadcast when I went to go get lunch, and I was afraid of this. The time came that Ocean View Bakery has closed, and we had heard that Joanne's husband, they in their 90s, that he had passed over the winter, and I kind of was worried or expected that was the case, and Ocean View. After an incredible run, has closed. So that was a little sad, and that, yeah, I got a little choked up. So the greatest chicken cutlet sandwich anywhere with the roasted peppers and the fresh mozz, the balsamic vinegar, but appreciative of all the years of service, and I hope Joanne's okay. And those of you that have ever been, you certainly know. But I did get a visit into Snooki over at Nunzio's on Wednesday night, and she already has noted how much the atmosphere and the track patrons that are upbeat, and also the staff from Monmouth, and I made an adjustment. I went to Brennan's, who does a great job. So, back down for Haskell. Looking forward to it. And thank John Himes and Dennis Drazen and everybody at Monmouth. Head back soon. We've got a busy morning and I think a really fun 3 hours, including the kickoff after the first break, and we'll try to keep this train on the tracks. Speaking of the trains, I did have to wait for a New Jersey rail in Long Branch. a huge commuter train. I was kind of shocked, actually, at how big it was. And slow moving, too. The evening tomorrow at Churchill should be just magical. It certainly was when American Pharoah, in fact, I put my picture up with today's lineup just now, tweeting before we started, and it was just such a wonderful evening, and I wish I could be there. Father's Day weekend, though, and getting to Connecticut on Sunday, my dad, combination, 89th birthday, and Father's Day lunch, so I can't go to Churchill, but I hope a lot of you take advantage. If you weren't there for American Pharoah, for his parade, now American Pharoah stayed out for an hour and 20 minutes. he did everything but but go sit in the grandstand with people. An hour and 20 minutes before he started to get a little antsy and annoyed, but this horse will not be as accommodating. He'll pose and he'll hear your camera clicks and he'll throw his ears up and he'll look over. He's gotten very good at that, but I don't think he's staying out for as long as American Pharoah did. But you'll have Bob Baffert and Jimmy Barnes and the team and Mike Smith. The owners, phalanx of owners will be there. And, of course, you know, a heavy Louisville influence with the group involved with Jack Wolf and the Starlight team. Very special, undoubtedly, for them tomorrow night. Lansden Robbins, I know, and the Collies and whoever else. Don't know if what other Starlight partners can make it. I think they'll all try. And then, of course, Sal Kuhlman and so forth. And the Windstar team will be out in force, undoubtedly. And Mike Wallace and China Horse Club. It should be really special. So if you have a chance to go tomorrow night. And then, if there wasn't enough going on there, if that wasn't going to be good, oh, there's a pretty good card. We'll talk to Marty McGee first after the break. The Foster, the Wise Dan, the Matt Wynn, you got Axeman making his next step forward. It's hard to believe it could be his biggest, not his biggest star right now, certainly, but a horse with huge upside. Of course, Backyard Heaven, speaking of upside, going to come back out of the Ali Sheba and try for a grade one here in the Foster for Chad Brown and Mr. Ramsey, Ken Ramsey and Sarah and the team. A tremendous card. The Fleur de Lis came up great. The regret is eye crossing with some horses making dirt to turf moves, and holy cow, just a super card. And you got pick fives, an all stakes pick five, all stakes pick four, and then actually you have a second chance at it with the last two races. An allowance and a non-winners of two on the dirt sprints going with the Foster and the Regret. And actually, there's even a Fleur de Lis to the nightcap. So, should be a great evening at Churchill. We'll talk to Marty. Rich Migliori, been waiting to get the hold of Mig. We'll get his final Belmont thoughts after spending a nice, really, the time with him and Zoe was so well spent. Nick Tamaro will be here top of hour two. We'll do some analysis of the wagering strategy that you may have employed. Ideally, it was successful. We'll talk to Nick about that. Plus, we'll get some action, some plays from Nick looking at both New York. He got the poker on Sunday.
you got some terrific Sunday Father's Day action. Of course, John Himes yesterday mentioning what a big day it is at Monmouth. It's also been traditionally a huge day in Chicago at Arlington. That's always been special, Father's Day. And I mean, at one time, wasn't that the early going back? Wasn't that the summer kickoff for Arlington at one time? I think. If I don't, yeah. Ed DeRosa, Rick Hammerly, and then we got two special visits. At the end of the show, last half hour, Nick Luck, and we will get the Royal Ascot preview. Kicks off, of course, on Tuesday. It's become really a fun part of our first half broadcast season. We'll take vacation after next week, but Royal Ascot has become really, given that we can play most of the races, really special. So we get a chance with Nick today. Nick circulating a picture on Twitter of him on board a Royal Ascot winner. Well, he said he hasn't been on a horse in 20 years. It's pretty funny. And then also a special visit mid-show. Ron Paolucci is going to join us. Looch. And we could talk about a lot of things with Looch, as always. We could talk about he bought some horses yesterday and Wednesday at OBS. He's running horses all over the place, as usual. But we'll talk about him hitting yesterday's jackpot single six at Churchill. For those that hadn't heard, and I don't think it had been publicized, Ron Paolucci, $550,000 on a sequence that was only moderately squirrely. I think that was the most amazing part. We'll talk to Ron. You know, Ron has been a big, I mean, listen, he's like an octopus. He's got eight arms. He plays, have you ever seen him working? He's playing eight tracks at once. But this was a sequence. I mean, there were a lot of mid-priced horses. $13 winner in the first leg, $840 in the second, $1,260 in the third. They weren't even big fields. You had a favorite in the sixth, a first-time starter. In fact, that's an important race. That looks like some two-year-olds that are going to be nice. Mark Cassie with the Oxley. The Violence Colt. Strike Silver and Nitrous for Steve Asmussen and Winchell Stone Street. I mean, two very good two-year-olds. Then you had another $11 winner, Ian Wilkes, and then you had the one, you know, very, you know, $20 winner. But it doesn't seem like a sequence that should get a jackpot takedown. It is, and it does, and it was, and it. We'll talk to Ronnie about it. He also, I want to talk about his pick five the other day when he took the pick five for 52,000 and change in New York. And you know, Ron's got an approach, and yes, he plays big tickets, but the lessons of the approach are not unhelpful. So congratulations to Ron. It's always fun anyway to talk to Ron Paolucci. We'll head to the break. Let's do that and stay on point, Case. And as we do that, I got to talk. I didn't get to it yesterday because it's so complex. And next week we'll have to get some people in from the CHRB and Tim Ritvo. This situation at Golden Gate that apparently is serious and has real disastrous consequences looming for racing at Golden Gate Fields. This has to do with the simulcast dispensation, I guess, the monies. And this is such a complex area of the game that nobody really, you know, that we as players, we only roll our eyes about this kind of stuff. But it is the inner workings And it does, it affects horsemen and owners, and obviously the bricks and mortar and so much more. But it has to do with, in this case, the operator, the Stronach Group, having to subsidize off-track, the off-track wagering facilities, which is, in this particular case, Northern Cal, the NotWink, N-O-T-W-I-N-C. And that mechanism, Tim Ritvo and Stronach Group says they don't need to be be funding this. And there's obviously some negotiations that are going to have to go on between the myriad of as Satish famously called them, the alphabet soup organizations, in this case, California specific. There's CARF, there's TOC, there's CHRB, there's NOTWINC, there's TSG. And it all spells Cirrus. So I'll alert you to it. I doubt that Hammer's got a lot to impart other than what, you know, seeing from a, from Southern California. It also involves the fairs, and it's a whole mishigas. So be aware of this, and next week we'll see what the specifics are. They had a meeting, they had a paddock meeting with the horsemen. There's a lot of working parts to that. And, you know, speaking of jackpot hits, there was a jackpot hit yesterday at Santa Anita, too. That's just a normal pick six. And this one, too, was not, this was also a fairly normal set of winners, except for the $37 winner from Scott Hansen. In the fifth, Frankie Machine paid $37.40, but everything else was mundane. Weekend preview at the races, closing out Triple Crown. Back after this, Marty McGee will go to the Ville.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BridgeNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BridgeNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BridgeNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BridgeNet.com/APR. The BridgeNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BridgeNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BridgeNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Maybe I'm foolish, maybe I'm blind, thinking I can see through this and see what's behind. Got no way to prove it, so maybe I'm lying. But I'm only human after all. I'm only human after all. Don't put your blame on me. Don't put your blame on me.
Marty McGee joining us on the Daily Racing Forum as the other big weekend at Churchill Downs in the spring and early summer is upon us. Foster Knight, another Triple Crown winner to be feted in front of the probably raucous Downs After Dark crowd. I understand a couple of weeks ago the crowd for Downs After Dark was it was like a rave at a racetrack. Marty, good morning.
What else is new, Bick? Bick, you just sent me the picture of Paolucci's Luke, his winning photo, a photo of the winner of the single six here last night, and I'm in awe. I'm in absolute awe. And are you
huh?
Saving all this news for when Luch comes on with you, or what?
No. I put it out there, you know, in with the preview, the show preview tweet.
Wow. Man, he is something else. I tell you, I bet that thing last night. I put $72 into it, and I singled the first winner, and only used two horses in the next. And I was really excited because I thought I had a good chance, but then I flubbed out in the last two legs. Even though I used four horses and three horses. I one of these days I'm going to hit it. It's not going to be Luch. It's going to be me.
Now you're talking, and we'll get his approach. And he had two tickets, about $1,700 each, and that's his typical when he goes after, you know, these big pot opportunities. We're going to also talk about his 50,000 plus hit in New York last week of the pick five that otherwise that was a squirrely sequence. So I want to hear his approach. We've talked about the rainbow with him too, and I could ask him, Marty, the same question I asked Dan Borislav, the late Dan Borislav, when he took down the rainbow, I said, Dan, does this get you even? And he said, well, maybe close. couldn't guarantee.
there will never be anything like what Borislav did. Never.
No, that was nuts.
$7.6 million.
Unbelievable. Looking at these prices.
What's that?
Yeah, they weren't that. This other than the nightcap,
yeah,
it was like mid-priced horses.
Zero favorites. That's always key.
Yeah.
Zero favorites.
Yeah, yeah.
And plus, you know, I kept warning you, and I've written a little bit about it. They weren't betting that much into this thing. If you had, you know, normally, it seems like Gulfstream gets a higher percentage vis-a-vis the carryover of handle than Churchill has been getting on this thing. You know, they only bet $116,000 on this last night. You're talking about chasing a $450,000 carryover. You know, the chances, obviously, the lower the handle, the bigger the chance somebody's going to get to solo sweep it, and lo and behold, that's what happened last night.
Yep. And now that you mentioned the favorite aspect, I'm just doing a quick note. One, two, three. That's exactly what happened here. Fourth choice,
second choice, fourth choice, second choice, fourth choice, fourth choice. That's exactly just that. That's just enough to leave it open for cash.
Yeah. So anyway, congrats to Luch.
Well, and I suppose, Mark, congrats to Churchill for being in position to have another Foster night that includes not just the presentation of the Derby trophy hardware, but also the parading of a Triple Crown winner. It should be another great night there tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, we did this 3 years ago, and I assume it's going to be somewhat of a carbon copy, although I can't remember it being as early on the card as it's going to be. They're going to run the second race around 6:30. Shortly after that, Justify will begin walking over. So I guess about 6:40 is when he will start coming around the 7/8 pole and all that, walking over. I guess Sonny will be with him and Jimmy Barnes. I don't know how they're going to do it exactly. But then they'll walk into the paddock prior to the third race. He'll stand in there during the third race, and then after the third race, which will be about 7 o'clock, we're talking about Saturday night at Churchill. They'll do the whole shebang with the owners and Baffert getting his trainer's trophy. Mike Smith is coming in to ride Axeman only, which will be in the fifth race. And so they'll all get their trophies, and Churchill will do the whole dog and pony show. And 3 years ago when this happened, we had 29,000 people. And that is the biggest crowd, Steve, since the record for the Downs After Dark. They've had 46 Downs After Dark cars since 2009. That was the largest crowd since the record was set at the opening night in the at the 2011 spring meet. So I would imagine this will be one of the larger crowds we've had in quite a while for these Downs After Dark cards.
Well, and it's a really, really engaging card, Mart. And let's dive in. We've got, I explained to people, there's the two overlap pick five, pick fours. There's the all-stake pick five, the all-stake pick four, and then a second set that goes from race seven, from the Fleur-de-Lis to the nightcap, a pick five, as well as the late pick four, which is the Foster, Regret, and those two sprints. And let's start with the Matt Wynn. You mentioned Axeman, and it feels like everybody is pretty much acquiescing to the misremembered cult.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can multi your brains out on this card. I'm looking right now at the morning lines. Axeman 4-5. You know, I tried to beat him at Pimlico like an idiot, and he just galloped. There's no speed in here, it doesn't look like, to challenge him. So, keeping with the theme of Baffert and Smith and all that for the night, it sure looks like Axeman's going to dominate this race. So, you know, he hasn't really run against much yet, and you're probably going to be saying, coming out of this race, the same thing. At some point, we'll see how he matches up against some of the better three-year-olds in the class, but sure looks like he'll win at about a $3 mutual.
A couple of horses to note in here, and we talked to Steve Asmussen going back to Tuesday, celebrating the tremendously exciting mile win by B Jersey over Mind Your Biscuits, and I asked him about Combatant, and Combatant is the... He had a couple of horses to consider in here, and Combatant comes back in this spot. And of course, he broke his maiden at Churchill. You've also got Funny Duck coming out of that splashy Pat Day mile win, and he certainly worked well coming back out of it and stretches back around two turns, which he hasn't done since his turf days. And then there's an emergent, maybe, a horse coming from Mike Tomlinson, who's had just a wonderful meet, and that's Home Base. And all three of those deserve some attention. And of course, at one time, Tis Mischief, a horse that was seemingly stepping forward. Dale Roman's also has got King Zachary, and then there's Joan Scott with an outsider.
Yeah, you know, Funny Duck, I had written, and Rusty had actually told me about a week after he won on Derby Day that he was definitely going to run this horse in the Ohio Derby. I don't know if the Churchill people put pressure on him to stay home or what, but or maybe he thinks he's in a good spot here. But you know, my initial conversations with Rusty post Pat Day Mile was, do you want to run him in the Woody Stevens? Because obviously that was a one turn race, and he said, no, I'm really eager to go ahead and stretch him back out now that he's shown that that he likes the dirt. So I imagine Funny Duck, he could be the second choice in here, him or Combatant.
Well, a good group of three-year-olds, as always. The Matt Wynn, kind of the Midwest launching point for lots of different directions, including horses that'll head for regional derbies and more. And let's talk about the turf opportunity. Here's the Wise Dan, the former firecracker. And you look at this group, and you start with World Approval, the really dull performance in the Kilrow, then was ready to run in the Dixie, which of course came off the turf, and so maybe that extra 3 weeks might have been good for World Approval. He is the horse to beat, but after that Kilrow, I'm sure some people will line up against him.
Yeah, you know, I'm a little leery of him, as you know, especially at 6-5, or maybe he'll tip down to odds on, you know, in this kind of field. But, you know, Mark's been a little bit tentative in terms of his praise for this horse. So I would approach this with caution. You know, normally I would go on and go over to the Visadero because of his spectacular record over the Churchill turf. He's 3-for-3, of course, with the American turf. I guess it was in 15, and then the, both the Woodfords, now the, Old Forester, he won both of those in 16 and 17. But, you know, Steve, I'm a little protective of my man, Buff Bradley, and the owner of Gunpowder Farms took this horse away from him, gave it to a trainer named Kelly Ruby at Fair Hill, and he did run pretty well in his comeback at Monmouth. But, you know, just with Buff, my feelings are kind of hurt for him. So I think I might try a stranger or two in here. Flatlined his race last out, was sneaky good. I thought, you know, as great as he is, Corey Lannery, he took this horse inside and kind of got his momentum stopped over about between the half mile pole and the 3/8 pole, and that kind of ruined that last out effort. So it's really a better race than it looks on paper. And then Parlor, I've always been a big fan of this horse, and he ran real big in an allowance victory here, going from almost last to first pretty quick in mid-May. So I'll probably branch out a little bit in this spot here with both Flatlined and Parlor and take a chance.
Well, if you hadn't brought him up, I would have, because the Lonro 4-year-old Parlor for Eddie Keneally, absolutely second off the layoff, second start as a 4-year-old, and he was nosing around Sirius Sophomore Turf Company last year. For all the times we've already mentioned how Mike Tomlinson has had an incredible meet, it actually hasn't been better than Eddie Keneally's meet.
Yeah, him and Decky Cannon, my man from Ireland. Yeah, underrated, like a lot of these guys are.
Well, as we say, Eddie Keneally, he's magically delicious, and Parlor may be a delicious 8, 9, 10 to 1 in here, and I agree that he, especially with a fair amount, you know, of decent pace in here, could get a nice run. Brian Hernandez lands aboard. And I guess the one other price we didn't bring up, well, Mr. Misunderstood needs a look, and so does Mr. Cub for Ian Wilkes. I mean, they're both within striking distance.
Yeah, I think this is if you're going to take a stand against one of these favorites on this card, I think this is probably the spot to do it. And by the way, if Eddie Keneally wins, does he call you Steve a lot, Steve? Because when he talks to me, Marty, he says, Marty, these Irish guys, they all do it. Like Brendan Walsh and Niall O'Callaghan used to do it. They use your name a lot. I guess it's an endearing thing that they're taught. But, you know, Steve, when he talks to me, Steve, he uses my name a lot.
I think now that you say it, I wouldn't have noticed it, but I think you're right. I think you're right.
I know I'm right.
That's great. The fleur-de-lis, you could start, for anybody that gets stopped along the way, you could start a late pick five here, and the mile and the eighth standard for the fillies and mares. And I looked around, and Val Dorna is okay in here. Rusty Arnold is sneaky maybe with Awestruck, but I don't see how Blue Prize doesn't have the best shot in here. Farrell, I don't know, the tendency to get corralled late.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I think it was Jose Ortiz in an inside post that ultimately Blue Prize will be the favorite here, especially when you go back and look at that romp she had here last fall in the Fall City. So 7-2 on the line, I think maybe 2-2.5-1 is about right. And as Nacho told me earlier this week, you know, he really didn't want to run her on that slop at Pimlico, but she does have that race under her, and now she's back closer to home. She's up at Keeneland, and, you know, I think a lot of things point in her favor. If not, you know, you got Luch with the one horse in here, Furiously Kissed, and, you know, he's got some good karma going on right now, obviously. And then I think there's enough speed in here to entertain Farrell. You know, she was really loose on the lead in the La Troyenne, but you've got both Awestruck and Apology Not Accepted to perhaps offset that kind of dominant speed. So I think it would have to set up for either Blue Prize or the filly up at Keeneland that is training real well, according to David Carroll, that being Val Dorna, the Stone Street Stables homebred. So I would probably lean toward Blue Prize here, mostly with maybe a little bit of Saber on Val Dorna.
Gets us to the Foster, and an interesting group of nine in here. And midfield, there's Backyard Heaven coming out of the breakthrough win in the Ali Sheba. A lot of layoff lines, and you get the sense that this Tisway of Ken Ramsey's and Chad Brown basically is a horse that, you know, has needed time between races, but it's a very good sign that he's worked three times since the win, and that says that, you know, that he's right. If he runs back to the Ali Sheba, he's going to be very, very tough to beat. But there's a lot of horses, Marty, that want to be involved here, and as a result, I think it's hard not to, you know, consider some of the runners that are going to try to rally, including Patch.
Yeah, well, I mean, actually, he's had four works, and I think that in itself is a sign. I don't care what the times are on the works. The fact that Chad has set him down on the rail four times, I think that's a huge thing. I did have a conversation with Ken Ramsey about this horse. Of course, he could not be more enthusiastic. You know, using him in the same breath as Kitten's Joy and Roses in May and like that. So, you know, his buyers are just off the charts from the win in March at Aqueduct and then in the Ali Sheba. You know, there is some other speed in here, obviously, but I can't help but think that Irad will get a good position with him close to the pace, and this horse will just win. You know, Irish War Cry would have to be against him because the Pimlico Special was one of those longer races where when he made the lead, they went past the wire the first time, you're like, you know, they're all just galloping around there. How are they going to end up catching him? And he just romped. So, you know, we're all big Graham fans. I know that. But I just can't help but think that the favorite is really strong in here. And again, I think maybe 4-5 even money, something like that.
I would also mention that, you know, for those of you that have been waiting and watching and looking for Pavel to find the right spot and who feel that, you know, he keeps finding the toughest spots possible. He's interesting to me in here, and I think he's going to get ignored, and I think he's worth having on tickets.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a slug up kind of thing. You know, he ran real good in Dubai, I thought, and not so good at Santa Anita in his next start. So, you know, I find it kind of interesting that Doug O'Neill sending both him and Mopletism here this way for this race, kind of going out of his way to maybe add to their records. I don't know. It's just kind of an unusual move. You would think that your man Hammer would want to keep him home, but, you know, I guess there's not anything for them to run in over the next month or two.
Well, we turn our attention now to the regret, and it amazes me. $100,000, 3-year-old fillies on the grass, and mile and an eighth, 13 of them. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean it's by far the best race, and you know this will be at the peak of the what do you call it, the rave? I mean, this
yeah.
will be when. People have really got their buzz on. So, you know, I'm for my brother here with the 7-horse Go Google Yourself. Very disappointing in the Oaks opener, but there wasn't a lot of pace in there. And they had been, both Samantha Siegel, the owner, and my brother have been talking about wanting to get her on the grass. So it looks like this is a pretty good spot. There is no standout in here. I thought that Baffert with the 4-horse Finesse Beret, you know, you put a big line through that one dirt race in the Santa Anita Oaks, and she might match up with these horses. You know, she's well drawn toward the inside and all that. So, otherwise, I'll give the floor to you in terms of suggestions because this looks way, way wide open in terms of how to approach this.
I agree. It's a fascinating group, and you start looking for some pace thoughts and, you know, who's going to be on the lead and where's the pressure going to come from. And that is clearly the topic. And from that standpoint, you got Jose Ortiz, who's good enough every day in that setting. Romantic Moment for Shug. It really feels like, you know, the horse from a pace standpoint that gets the lead and takes them a long way. And I would also want to include, I'm just reaching for the prices here, 6-1, the 8-horse Beyond Blame. I like what looks to be the ability to be involved in pace, be placed anywhere. You get the benefit of Giroux, Brad Cox, and so Beyond Blame. And as you mentioned, the surface switch with Go Google Yourself. You know, she's out of a deputy minister mayor. Got to figure out, you know, how much turf there might be in there for her.
Yeah, I mean this is obvious. If you've got to stand out in here, you're a genius because this is a wicked. This is the kind of races we all like to bet on.
Well, the dam broke her maiden. And then was retired. Rick Dutrow trained for Samantha, and Taunt was the dam. She broke her maiden. She was a New York bred and broke her maiden on the inner dirt in New York. I think she was a New York bred. No, maybe not. Kentucky. So I'm going to have to go searching for turf. Marty, it's a phenomenal night of racing, and it should be exciting. The atmosphere was electric for Pharaoh's celebration, and I expect the same tomorrow.
Yeah, if you're coming, come early because, you know, it's all going to get started pretty quick. So, and the parking and all that, you know, can be a hassle on nights like this. So try and get here early if you want to see Justified make his last appearance here, I guess, until he comes back. Well, I want to ask you real quick, Steve, what do you think they're going to do with him in terms of working backwards if, in fact, they're going to run the Breeders' Cup Classic? You think they'd go what they did with American Pharoah, that being Haskell, Travers, Breeders' Cup?
I was just at Monmouth yesterday for the opening of the sports betting parlor, and John Himes, the racing secretary, said that they're already courting Baffert and Elliott Walden. So it's a possibility. The initial post-Saturday considerations were maybe one start before the Breeders' Cup and most likely out west, but it does feel based on that certainly on that return to the racetrack yesterday. John Nichols sent me that terrific video, and people were couldn't help but remark how strapping he looks, and how basically it's unbelievable.
Yeah, he did. By the way, he did the same thing this morning, just jogged around there one time. So, you know, well, I'm sure the full court press is going to be put on by both Monmouth and Saratoga, and you know, I'm sure the aim of the Windstar et al. People is to keep him unbeaten through his career. So they're kind of in a tough spot, really. A lot of hard decisions to be made.
Well, we'll see how it unfolds. It won't surprise me if he does run a couple of times before Breeders' Cup, but we'll leave this in the capable hands of Baffert and his team, who have really just so distinguished themselves again through this. And we also, Marty, looking forward to the season winding down there, of course, and racing will start July 1 at Ellis Park.
Yeah. You know, normally the last few years they've closed the meet here on a Saturday night. That's not the case this year. They'll just run a regular Saturday afternoon program on June 30th and go the next day to Ellis on Sunday, July 1. So, all right, buddy. Have a good day.
Mart, outstanding. Marty McGee, everybody. DRF McGee. And now he's going to get ready to write the Paolucci story. Ron's going to join us about 45 minutes. Right now, though, we'll take the break, 15 to the top, and Rich Migliori will get Rich's final thoughts about Belmont Saturday, and not just, of course, the performance of the winner, but some of the other storylines that have really, they for the most part, have had pretty thoughtful discussion. When it comes to whatever you think of what Castellano's decisions were with Noble Indy and Florent Giroux's handling of Restored Hope, you know, the bigger storyline that, which is kind of the way I approached it, is the environment in which we're dealing industry-wide, and you know, the ownership overlap, and it's funny, when I brought it up with Elliot Walden after Derby, I thought it was more or less a subplot to what was happening. Not surprising how we ended the Triple Crown season, and it became not just a subplot, but a major storyline, and not just coming out, but going forward. Let's go forward. The Mig joins us next. Nick Tamaro later. Ron Paolucci, who finds himself $550,000 richer this morning, minus what he spent at OBS, and Ed DeRosa Hammer. And Nick Luck, the Royal Ascot preview. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
This is Steve Cole from the Cole Ranch, a horse farm and training center located in California. We offer folks the chance to join hands with us to own a young racehorse from our farm. We're dramatically different compared to most popular racing partnerships because we don't charge fees or commissions, and we don't inflate the value of the horse. Most racing partnerships buy a horse at auction for, say, $100,000, then turn around and sell shares for $200,000. We value our horses realistically and don't add on fees or commissions. Right now, Cole Ranch is selling shares in a 2-year-old Calbred colt named Mr. Wickham. He's by Heatseeker out of Serena's Echo, our stakes-producing mare, who is a full sister to multimillionaire Thor's Echo. You can get into this horse for as little as $1,000, which will entitle you to a 5% interest. If you want to invest in this horse, please call me at area code 805-990-3669 or visit us on the web at thecoleranch.com.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. About 10 minutes to the top of the hour. Rich Migliori standing by. And, of course, we had just the best 45-minute analysis with Zoe and Richie heading into Belmont weekend. Now we've had a chance to let the dust settle and all the conversation that has come out of the Triple Crown victory by Justify. Rich, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Steve. Fantastic to see it done again, and you know, to have a horse do what he's done in such a short period of time. I mean, he is just a shooting star. I mean, it's amazing. I really had my doubts that a horse could win the Derby, you know, without that foundation everybody talks about, and you know, so much made of Apollo and this and that. But not just win the Derby, but the Triple Crown. He's pretty remarkable.
The way the race unfolded, and we looked at everything and everybody going in, ended up analyzing, you know, all nine foes and him, and how you expected and Zoe expected Mike Smith to deal with the inside. And in fact, Dick Powell yesterday did bring up the way the gate was positioned, and of course leaving the one hole open, and that, you know, gave Smith even more room to operate. But it was notable on the head on Rich, the way the same thing we see to the outside, and during Derby in the 14 and 15, the auxiliary gate and the main gate, the open space. And sure enough, when the gates open, Justify went for the open space closer to the rail before Smith, you know, brought him back out.
Well, yeah, I mean, horses tend to run to, you know, open space. I mean, and like you said, we've seen that in the Derby. You know, everybody thinks if you get the last gate in the last stall in the first gate, how, you know, it's an advantage. We've seen those horses get wiped out because horses want to run to that empty space, and they've got momentum. They're breaking hard left, and particularly a race like the Derby, 20-horse field, nobody's straightening up. I mean, everybody kind of knows that they're on their own. You don't ask for any quarter, you don't give any, and, you know, unfortunately, it's roughly run usually, but that's, you know, how it works. I mean, we kind of all know that. But what makes Justify so good, besides his obvious natural ability, is that Mike sent him out of there. I mean, he sent him out of there. And then he can switch off again. So many horses would just run away with the rider after they would be in, you know, sent out of the gate. The fact that he could turn it on and off, he's got that mental capacity to do what the rider wants, when the rider wants it, whether it's, you know, do more, show speed, or put my hands down and come back to me and float. And in so many respects, he reminds me of Affirmed in that respect. You think about Coffin, he used him out of the gate in the Derby, got forward position, you know, off, just off a fast pace, like worked out that perfect trip. But then he put his hands down and Affirmed idled. And then when something comes to him or when he's asked, he does more. It's just phenomenal to watch an athlete of Justify's ability have that, just that mental prowess to be able to do it. I'm just so impressed with that. Because I thought, like, through my career, there were so many horses, even Hidden Lake, who was probably, you know, the easiest horse to ride of all the good horses I ever rode. If you asked her a bit too much, she'd jump in the bit and just run away with you. So you always had to kind of walk that tightrope. But, I mean, Justify gives Mike that luxury, and, you know, nobody's better on the big stage than Mike. I mean, he just seems so unflappable, doesn't he, Steve?
Very much, and we talked to him as well on Wednesday, and he was, you can tell, he knows what he has, and what the subsequent conversation we may get into about what was going on behind him, frankly, when you see how Vino Rosso ranged up, and whenever anybody ranged up, Smith knew he could just, whether he smooches, whether he squeezes his knees and gives an indication, leans forward a tiny bit, this horse takes the cue and just rips the heart out of anybody. And I'm sorry, they can twist themselves, I said this yesterday or day before, twist themselves into pretzels about what was going on behind this horse will demolish anybody that comes at him.
Well, you know, it's just like Affirmed. If he saw who was coming at him, he would outfight them and he'd get them to back away. The only time Aladar beat him was when there was a horse in between them entertaining Affirmed and he was able to sneak up on him. Let's talk about what went on behind. I have a bit of a different take on it than maybe some other people. And, I think if you go back to last year's Belmont, and I believe it was Dallas Stewart's horse that Florent Giroux rode. And the horse got really rank with him into the first turn. And he clipped heels. He nearly fell. He lost his stirrups. Do you remember that, Steve?
I do, vaguely.
Okay, well, so I
yes,
remember.
That's vaguely. Right. That's right. And then he on the backstretch, he went out toward the outer rail.
Right. And you know, like I said, he clipped heels, nearly got unseated. Now, he was told to be forwardly placed with his horse, Restored Hope. Horse didn't break great, and he kind of sent him, and now the horse jumped in the bit and started running off of him. Just what we were saying about Justify, the complete opposite. Justify can, you know, stop and go. He's a ballet dancer, right? He can do what's asked and then back off. Again, most horses don't do that or can't do that. So now the horse gets rank with him. What's Florent supposed to do? Lap on top of Justify, trained by the same guy, and make both horses rank? Because usually what you do, particularly at Belmont, is you'll take a horse a bit wide, get them back to you, you know, get them to come back to you, and then ease back in, which is exactly what he did. I'm hearing all these conspiracy theories that, well, he was blocking, he was this and that. I saw a guy that asked his horse to run, had a bad experience in the first turn last year at Belmont, and when the horse got ranked with him, said, you know what, the best thing I can do is take him a little bit wide, get him to come back to me, so I'm in control, and then ease back down. And that's just what he did. I just didn't see all of this incredible blocking going on. We're talking about horses that weigh over 1,000 pounds, and you're using them as moving blocks. It's not that easy. I mean, we had a script in A Bronx Tale, how the race was supposed to run. It took us 5 takes to get it right. We had a script. So if anybody thinks that, as I think Florent Giroux is phenomenally talented, I don't think he's that talented where he can use a horse like it's a car. They're just not cars.
I agree. And there's a lot of, you talk about scripts, there's a lot of these, kinds of discussions that have the most bizarre assumptions being made about racetrack business and about about what goes on the track or behind the scenes. It's not that simple. There aren't people, you know, making these arrangements on the fly and being that clever and that, you know, that Machiavellian. I understand why people may think that way, and it gets rich to the broader discussion, which we were having all throughout the Triple Crown season, about these cross-purpose ownerships and, you know, some of the things, you know, involving, you know, for instance, if you fold in the Noble Indy and the comments from Mike Rapoli and his annoyance at Javier, I mean, I don't think Noble Indy wasn't keeping up, period.
He also hit the side of the gate leaving there. He didn't get away as cleanly. Now, maybe if, you know, he breaks the way Justify did, you know, maybe then Javier has an opportunity to go forward and press the pace. But naturally, he's just not as fast a horse early. I mean, he possesses speed, but not that kind of speed. So he would have had to break very cleanly. And listen, everybody who knows me knows that I speak my mind. When I see a rider do something that I feel they didn't make an effort or puts another rider in danger, I'm the first one to speak out about it. But in this case, I just think a lot was made of not really a lot. I mean, maybe it didn't have a great look, but I think you have to take a step back and think about things. And I know when I rode, if I had a bad experience or put myself in a bad position, maybe I would have a tendency to overcompensate a little bit if confronted with that same position the next time. And maybe, you know, Florent, and I can't speak for him, but watching it, I just saw a guy who had a rough trip in the Belmont the year before when a horse got ranked and there was no pace on, was going to make sure he secured his position. And then his horse got too keen, wanted to do too much. And I mean, if you watch a head-on, particularly down the back stretch, just, you know, how many races we run two turns at Belmont, you can count on one hand in a year on the dirt. You'll see guys out in the 8 path, the 10 path down the back stretch, because you shut horses off that way. You put them to sleep. They kind of get lost out in the middle of the track. And then you ease down for the turns. And that's all I saw. I just didn't see all of this, you know, skullduggery going on.
Yeah, agreed. When it comes to what was happening in a couple different respects, also the horses trying to rally, I think you look at the chart and you see where Hofberg and Gronkowski came from, and this is another thing that is not being, I think, widely appreciated, is how any horse that attended the pace ended up on the back half of the field. That's an indication that the pace was at least honest, if not faster than honest. And you go under 24 for the opening quarter, 37 for the opening 3/8, going a mile and a half, that's quick. And I think this is a horse that did exactly, Rich, what, if you drew it up, what you would have wanted him to do, which is just run them into the ground. And I didn't see this any other way coming in.
No, I mean, he made it a test of stamina. He threw down the gauntlet. Anybody who tried to keep up with him paid the price. I think a couple of good horses made runs at him. I mean, I think Hofberg's, you know, exceptionally good horse. You know, Rosso's shown he's got a lot of ability. Gronkowski was the X factor to me all week. I loved the way he trained on the dirt.
You did say that's right. That's right.
Yeah. I mean, he just really, you know, this is what he's probably always wanted to do. He just didn't have the opportunity to get on a dirt track. But when you watch horses work on the dirt, particularly turf horses, you can kind of differentiate, especially on the gallop out, if they're really dirt horses or not, because they tend not to gallop out very much. They tend to come, when they come off the bridle, then their stride deteriorates. This horse got stronger as his works went on, and his gallop outs were good, and he really got over a dirt course, you know, exceptionally well, particularly Belmont. You know, he ran some race, and he broke somewhat slowly. He just didn't get in stride right away. He broke okay, you know, on the slow side, but then he just got outfooted because, I don't know if it was a kickback or maybe he was just a little unsure of himself, but it took him a little while to find his stride. But by the time they got to the backstretch, you could see he was traveling in the bridle, and he was going to run well. But I thought he put, you know, ran a tremendous race. But listen, Justify is a true champion. For a horse to do what he did in 111 days, break his maiden, and you know, hats off to Bob Baffert to, you know, recognize what he had and map out a plan to get him there and do it. And I was really kind of on the opinion that he wasn't going to win the Preakness because I didn't like the way he looked. I thought he had lost weight between the Derby and the Preakness. I thought he was very vulnerable that day. And he actually put on weight between the Preakness and the Belmont. So, you know, as much as I was trying to beat him, with, you know, be clever and find something to beat him, I mean, I couldn't deny how good he looked when he got to Belmont Park. I mean, his coat was resplendent. His weight was all there. He, you know, that extra week, I guess the 3 weeks between the Preakness and the Belmont really did him good. And he's just a horse that really thrives on a workload that most horses would wilt from.
And that's I think the conclusion, certainly based on, you know, these two mornings here, that he's come back to the track. And you know, you say that about the weight, and I had John Gunther on Monday, and you know, you could hear in his voice just how proud he is of what he and his daughter Tanya have accomplished here with this horse. And you know, Gunthers have had great success a number of years, but it really, when he said that he had thought that it looked like he had put on weight since Baltimore, I mean, that I'll take his version as well, and it really is a testimony to, you know, to him. And Baffert had said that this is a horse that's been a bottomless pit when it comes to the feed tub, and it's a happy balance, and tricky, you know, from keeping them, you know, you want them to keep the weight on, but you also don't want them, you know, putting on, you know, you don't want them having any baby fat coming back either. It's an interesting, they got a horse 1,200 plus pounds.
You know, it's interesting too, you know, you bring up the Gunthers. I mean, just the job they've done and consistently over the years have just been tremendous breeders and contributors to our game. I won my first race on a horse named Good Grip 1980, and it was owned by a John Gunther. Now, I'm not 100% certain it's the same, but it would make sense that it would be, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. What was the horse?
A horse named Good Grip.
Good Grip. Well, did you, you know, I made him laugh, and we shared a laugh actually off air. I didn't even bring Justify up with him first. I brought up Kimberlite Pipe, and
right.
I think you rode him a time or two.
You know, I think I did, and I know Kieran McLaughlin trained for him, and I rode some horses for them, you know, with him as well. But for some reason, like, that just jumped into my head. I'm going to have to go back and do some research. I might even have the win picture someplace. But, I mean, just, you know, hats off to them to be able to do what they've done and then, you know, be rewarded with breeding a horse like this. And then Sunday morning I went out and I interviewed Mike Smith and Bob Baffert, and you could check those out on xbtv.com. But I'm talking with Jimmy Barnes, and I said, I hate to be like a tourist, but I'd really like to get a picture with Justify. And he was already back in his stall. So he said, yeah, let's go back there. And he had his butt to us, and he said, oh, don't worry, he'll get curious in a minute or two. He'll come to the front of the stall. So I waited a few minutes, and he kind of peeked around at me and almost sighed, like, can't people just leave me alone at this point? And he started to turn around, Steve, and I said, oh, okay, here he comes. I'll get a quick picture and I can leave him alone. And he kept circling, and he just laid down, like, he dismissed me. He laid down with his back to me. So I didn't get my picture with Justify yet.
Well, we're laughing a little about what's going to go on tomorrow night at Churchill. I was there for American Pharoah, and he was out for an hour and 20 minutes. I know anybody that's going tomorrow night, you may get 20 minutes. you're not getting to take pictures and look at him, and you're not going to drag him up and down the stretch. He's a little. A little
different
more
horse.
I mean,
American Pharoah was just so unusual, because 99% of good horses I've ever been around, just are very independent and don't want to be messed with, and they've got a little bit of a streak in them. American Pharoah just was like, hey, I like the adulation. I like people. Let's hang out. But Justify is a little bit different. He's got a little different kind of energy to him, but just phenomenal. But I do like what Bob does and shares him with the public and brings him out for the reporters. And Mike was getting interviewed by some news station, and he brought Justify right up behind him, and Justify bit him on the shoulder, not hard, but got him a little bit. And Bob thought it was hysterical. Mike never saw him coming. He spooked, and actually we've got B-roll of that, and it looked great. But it's great that he shares them with the people like that, and I think everybody really, really appreciates it.
Well, and back to your horse, Good Grip. Did that win come at the Meadowlands?
Yes, it did, yeah.
October 24th, 1980, in the fourth race, a maiden claimer.
Yep, that was my... the first win of my life, and I came back and won the very next race on a filly name exclusive section.
I love it. Well, you've got to have that. You should have your first win picture.
What's that? I'm sorry, I lost your first second.
Well, you should have your first win picture. That's.
I'm gonna have to go back and look. I got a bunch of stuff in trunks. I have to go look and see if I've still got it. You know how those things disappear. You misplace things.
Oh, no doubt. Well, and I will find out about the chart is not readily available. You did ride Kimberlite Pipe in his second start. That was at Saratoga, and broke his maiden.
Wow. I don't even remember that. I'm going to have to look that up. I do remember, when you said the name, I know I rode that horse, but I couldn't remember that I broke his maiden.
And at the time, Starview was the sole owner, and then John Gunther got involved, and they had a nice run. Kimmel trained.
Okay, all right. Now it's starting to come back to me. Yep.
And who did you beat?
Steve, I'm getting
this
old.
Is the best part. You beat Smith. You beat Mike Smith by a half a dozen. You were favored 3-2.
Oh wow. Well, you know, it's funny, too. If you ever get a chance to go into John Kimmel's office, there's a picture of me on Hidden Lake with Mike on Flat Fleet Feet in the gopher wand. And, Flat Fleet Feet got about a half length in front of us, and she came back and beat her. You ought to see Mike's face in this picture. He is just absolutely disgusted that he got in front and my mare came back and nailed him.
I've got this back. I just was looking. Now I've got the chart, and I've got it. I'm not looking at the PP correctly. You rode him, or you rode the winner in the race, as it was, and that was successful appeal.
Okay.
There you go.
Got it. All right. Yeah, successful appeal was a good horse. That was. I think I broke my arm right after that, and I didn't get to stick with him. But he was a nice horse.
Absolutely, and that's August of '98. Well, and Rich, some other thoughts from the whole Triple Crown experience, and from Saturday, not just Saturday, but the 3 days of racing. I mean, it was really a wonderful the way this whole thing came out. The weather cooperated. You had the nice crowd that. Was delirious again, and I think we've learned a valuable lesson about big crowds at Belmont and people having a good day or a bad day. It's funny how there's been so few complaints about the facility and about people's experiences when we've had two Triple Crown winners versus when the Triple Crown try goes wrong and everybody leaves, kicking the cat.
I tell you what, it was a great day of racing all the way through. Obviously, Justify winning the Triple Crown. But, Steve, it was a safe day of racing. There were no mishaps, no horses, no jockeys. Everything went perfect. The weather cooperated. It was absolutely a brilliant, brilliant day of racing. It was great, to be there on site covering it for XBTV. And it was a reminder of just how good our game could be. And, as a little kid loving racing. I got to see Secretariat on a black and white TV in Brooklyn. And then we had, like, the talk leading up to Secretariat was, well, the Triple Crown's too hard. They've got to make it easier. The horses aren't tough enough. They're not durable enough. We got to change things. And then by the end of the 70s, after the, you know, Affirmed was the third horse in the 70s to win it, the same people were saying, oh, it's got to be easier. I mean, it's got to be tougher. It's too easy. Everybody's doing it. And then we went 37 years, and all the talk was, you got to change it. You know what? The Triple Crown is hard, and it's exactly what it's supposed to be, because only certain kind of horses, special horses, are supposed to be able to achieve that. And I just, you know, find it funny how it sways back and forth with how long there's been since a Triple Crown winner, whether it's too easy or too hard. It's exactly what it's supposed to be.
Exactly. Well put. Well put. Well, Rich, one of the other highlights of the week, the kickoff to Race Day Express on XBTV started last Saturday, and week two tomorrow.
Yep, week two tomorrow. I thought, you know, the first show was good, and you know, everybody getting their legs under them about it. Michael Canale does a great job producing these, and you know, just a great team of people from coast to coast to give everybody a real good insight into, you know, what's going to take place for that racing day. And actually looking forward to tomorrow's show. Already doing some prep for it. I got to do bullet drills at noon today, just analyzing workouts, and then I'll be ready for tomorrow's show. So yeah, no, it's a, you know, exciting thing. We're all, you know, excited about Race Day Express, and it's you know, another fun thing, another thing to get excited about.
Rich Migliori, everybody, follow him on Twitter, Richard Migliori. Watch him, XBTV, and all the on-demand shows, and tomorrow the regular slot and the weekly opportunity to get ready for big race weekends and the big race Saturdays. This happens to be a big weekend part because of the Sunday action, Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to you. And hope some of the kids will be around to spend with you and Mel and Rich. That was a fun week in New York. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, Steve, thank you. It was, look forward to seeing you next thing up. Saratoga right around the corner.
5 weeks from today was pointed out. I saw somebody point that out. Unbelievable. Crazy. It's summer upon us. Rich, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Steve.
Take a time out here into hour two, and it looks like Nick Tamaro is going to – Nick needs a couple of minutes, so we'll go now to Ron Paolucci. How about that? We'll take the break here. Luch will join us and talk about his hit for $550,000 yesterday, the Churchill Downs single six. And you know, Ron plays the jackpot bet. He plays it down in Florida, too, Rainbow Six. And we haven't had a technique and approach and ticket-building conversation about the jackpots in a while. So this is a perfect occasion, and always fun to catch up with Ronnie anyway. But he also hit the pick five last week on a very squirrely sequence. It was a Wednesday, I think. Wednesday or Thursday for $52,000. The early pick five, the low takeout pick five. And Ron had a question. One of the reasons he reached out to me about this, about the taxes. And I got some, what I thought was the right answer, and then some clarification. The one tricky aspect of the new tax guidelines, if you're betting at the racetrack, if you bet separate tickets, and Ronnie did in this case, $1,700 and change, and then another one of similar size. If they're on separate tickets, they can't be combined for pool betting discussion and for tax purposes, as opposed to your ADW play. You have to put the bets, separate bets, on one ticket.
So that this is a bit of an event. And Ron's not, you know, Ron plays a lot, so he can use the tax hit in this case against other winning. So it's not a huge hardship, but it is a lesson for everybody about the difference between your ADW play and your at the track play, especially with summer racetrack holidays coming up. Looch, next.
The latest racing news.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
This is Steve Cole from the Cole Ranch, a horse farm and training center located in California. We offer folks the chance to join hands with us to own a young racehorse from our farm. We're dramatically different compared to most popular racing partnerships because we don't charge fees or commissions, and we don't inflate the value of the horse. Most racing partnerships buy a horse at auction for, say, $100,000, then turn around and sell shares for $200,000. We value our horses realistically and don't add on fees or commissions. Right now, Cole Ranch is selling shares in a two-year-old calibrated colt named Mr. Wickham. He's by Heatseeker out of Serena's Echo, our stakes-producing mare, who is a full sister to multimillionaire Thor's Echo. You can get into this horse for as little as $1,000, which will entitle you to a 5% interest. If you want to invest in this horse, please call me at area code 805-990-3669 or visit us on the web at thecoleranch.com.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.